Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Is John Elway right where he's the most comfortable? Zach Bye and Troy Rank in for the fellas this morning. Here's what I mean by that, Troy. John Elway was at his best as a quarterback when the Broncos were down and him leading an improbable fourth quarter comeback. This is that situation. This is the GM version of that situation. Do you trust John Elway in everything that he did this offseason in free agency and the draft, like you would trust John Elway with the ball in his hands with 2 minutes left?
I do not, because he had control over the outcome as a player and his ability in the clutch. I grew up here in Colorado. I watched his entire career. Nobody was more trusted in the clutch than John Elway. I mean, the guy, they against all odds, he would, I remember a game being at as a fan when they beat the Chiefs. I think they were down like 19-6 with a little over 2 minutes and won 20-19. I mean, I saw him do things that were magical as a player, but he controlled it. As a GM, the hard part, and he's talked about this, there's a helpless feeling that once you put the roster together, you're out of control. You know, it's like a pitcher releasing the ball. Like you don't control the outcome at that point. So in Elway's case, I've said this, they had a good offseason in terms of self-evaluation. They were humbled. They're hungry. They recognized, like, hey, it wasn't the whole league suddenly got, I mean, it was on them. They did a lot of things wrong to get to 5-11. And they recognized that. Changed the coaching staff outside of the head coach, a lot of coaching changes, changing how they're going to do pass blocking, changing how they, in terms of integrating new ideas. There's a lot of things but you're saying to me, do I trust all the moves? I like the draft. But until I know what Jared Valdir is at right tackle, I mean, until I can see it and I like him more than most, I'm bullish on Bradley Roby. Is he ready to step up? You know, am I crazy about losing Aqib Talib? I didn't like that move. I would have kept him. I understood why they didn't. But so I think they had a good offseason, Zach. But there's some looming questions, namely for me, with right tackle / offensive line. And how is this all going to fit with Vance Joseph, a coach you were within, you know, hours of firing? I mean, so there's still a lot of question marks here. But, you know, one thing that provides cover better than Revlon is a quarterback. And if Case Keenum, if he made the right choice there, and he did with Manning years ago, and I'm not saying Case is Manning, but if they made the right choice with Case Keenum, then yes, he had the best offseason he's had since Peyton Manning. If he didn't, then it's going to just be kind of regurgitating a lot of the old talk again all next season. But if they picked right with Case Keenum, as they believe they did, then it will be his best offseason since Manning, you know, since Manning / I guess the year they got Ware, TJ Ward, Emmanuel Sanders.
Well, to your point, if he gets it right with Case, he's going to make a lot of people forget about the misses, particularly at that position. Because, and I think we were running a promo last week or the week before of me saying this, that it doesn't really matter how you get your guy. It really doesn't. If you can get your guy, you got your guy. It doesn't matter if you get him in the first round, the second round, or in free agency. If you got him, then you got him. And it can be the ultimate. Remember the movie Men in Black where they lifted up the memory eraser and they hit the button and it flashes and it makes you forget? That's what Case Keenum can be for Paxton Lynch, for Brock Osweiler, even for Trevor Siemian. And dare I say Kyle Sloter. But it's going to be interesting to see, because I feel like John's almost got like an infinite amount of equity, nearly. But you're starting to hear some criticisms because, and I'll give you a for instance. Yesterday I did the afternoon show with Frank Schwab. He works for Yahoo. He did a extensive preseason or a 2018 outlook of season preview. And I asked him what his biggest takeaway was. He said his biggest takeaway after taking a deep dive into where this program is at is that there wasn't any proven players outside maybe a Justin Simmons, and I think he might have mentioned one other, proven players under the age of 29. And what the reason that is the case fundamentally is because you just haven't hit on enough draft picks in the handful of years leading up to this year's class. And you never feel it in those moments, but you feel it. You feel the ripple years after the fact. And but all that being said, if you get the quarterback position right, and you're back in the playoffs, you know, what are we really talking about? You know, it's we can point to, you know, the failures, but at the end of the day, if John can get this right from 5-11 to back to a playoff team, I think his equity as a GM will be as high or nearly as high as it was just a couple years ago. Agree or disagree, Troy?
Well, there'll be some still that fairly say you had this window with a championship defense that you would look back and go, man, you know, if they had solved that quarterback thing with that defense coming off a Super Bowl title, did they spoil a couple years? But the reality is, you know, the league, in the NFL, you feel like from year to year you can get back in it more than other sports. And if he's able to get it right with Keenum, a lot of the draft missteps will be forgotten. I mean, the reality is, part of it's where they draft. I mean, they were really good teams for a while, so you're drafting later. But, I mean, I think they're one of like three teams that haven't had a Pro Bowler since 2012, you know, haven't drafted one. I mean, that's when it adds up.
Just the Broncos and the Colts. Those are the only two teams in pro football that haven't drafted a Pro Bowler since 2012.
Yeah, and that hurts, and it pinched them last year when they started getting injuries and they needed guys to step up. And last year's, that previous rookie class was a disappointment in many ways. And, you know, and this year they drafted differently. Whether they said they've always had that mindset, they drafted guys who've been team captains. They drafted guys who were on the field early in college, who have a high football IQ. They clearly were focused on a specific type of player. Brainiac, get on the field early. Find a role, find a niche, fill it, and we'll see. I like their draft class way more than a year ago, just from being around them and watching Cortland Sutton, watching Deshaun Hamilton, watching Josie Jewell. I mean, and obviously the first round pick, Bradley Chubb. I mean, there's five guys in that class that I think are going to make an impact this season, even if it's in a special teams role, which was needed last year. So John Elway is, there isn't a Mount Rushmore of Carter Sports. He is the Mount Rushmore. There's John Elway. He's the Babe Ruth of Carter Sports. It's him and everybody else. There'll never, ever, ever be someone close to John Elway. Having lived it when he came here as a player, the attention on him, this was pre-social media, pre-media craze. I mean, the attention on him as a player and his arrival here was like nothing we'd ever seen in the history of the state. His ability to win the two Super Bowls. He is the Babe Ruth of Colorado. Does he have what I believe kind of this final chapter, maybe his last 4 years as a GM? Does he have one more great comeback in him? And that would be another title. And the challenge is real. Challenge is real. But he's got a case, and again, we'll see how this finishes, but up until the 2 years ago, a case as a Hall of Fame executive.
Yeah.
You know, whether you say that's all because of Peyton Manning, that's fine. Those records still count. You think Bill Polian's in the Hall of Fame without Peyton Manning?
Right.
No.
Right.
I mean, you benefit from great players. Peyton Manning came here in part because he wanted to be around John Elway and the stability of the Broncos. So you can't just discount that. Somebody lured Manning. He wasn't throwing darts.
If something bad happened on his watch, if we're going to be critical of that.
He gets credit for that.
That's right.
Well, that's where he wanted to be and had no other choices. Yes, he did. He had other choices. And he came here, and Elway was the recruiter. He gets credit for that, just like he gets blamed for these drafts.
Yep, and two things can be true at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
right? Like, it's not, there's misses, and we fairly criticize those, and, but I'm seeing it start to develop. I'm seeing the road to recovery, if you will, starting to develop. And if I can make the analogy to him as a player, 5-11 is like, you know, getting the ball down at the 2 yard line, right? This is the drive. This is the get right drive. And I think this offseason is the version of picking up, three first downs in a row with free agency, with getting Case Keenum and your draft class. I think it's three consecutive first downs and on the way toward something hopefully special.
You're more bullish on it than I am. You're more bullish on it because I lived the 8-game losing streak. I lived the blowout.
I was here. I
gotta see it. I'm in complete prove it mode with me after last year, because that 8-game losing streak, again, it wasn't 5-11, it was 2-10 with an 8-game losing streak that was as bad as any team in the history of the franchise. So I got to see it. I'm not saying, that's fine, it's over, it's fresh start.
Troy, I'm not handing them the trophy.
No,
I
want to
see it too. I'm just a little bit more optimistic than
you
are.
I covered the Rockies for 15 years, so I bathe in pesticides. I bathe in pesticides. It's my cologne. I got to see it. Prove it. Prove it. And they did have a nice offseason, but prove it.
How about the Denver Nuggets pulling in a former MVP candidate? What does Isaiah Thomas's arrival in Denver mean for the Nuggets? We'll tackle it next. Troy, a huge transaction last night with the Denver Nuggets. A couple of them. One, Isaiah Thomas, former MVP candidate from just 2 years ago, has ran into some roadblocks since then. But you talk about the potential risk and reward. Isaiah Thomas, who was once just 2 years ago looking at a $100 million contract, potential max deal, to now signing a one-year, $2 million deal with the Denver Nuggets. The story broke last night. What do you make of it, Troy?
I'm intrigued. As you mentioned, Isaiah Thomas at times is a prolific scorer. He could have been. He was certainly in the MVP conversation with the Celtics. He never got over how he was done dirty by them. He played hurt. He played through injury, feeling like he was going to get rewarded a $100 million deal, and instead he gets traded to Cleveland. He could never wrap his head around that. He was like a mole in their locker room. He didn't want to be there. He and LeBron clashed. Clearly at the end they did. And the guy I saw, let's take all that out of it, the guy I saw on the floor last year wasn't healthy.
He was not.
He was not healthy.
He was not. I think he was very anxious to come back and sign that big deal.
And he just...
And show that, hey, I'm good.
He probably should have set out all of last season,
frankly. I agree.
And now he had another procedure on the hip. But when he's right, he can score. And he's played with Mike Malone. They played together. He played with him in the Sacramento Kings. But he's at the point in his career, almost like when he got drafted as the last pick overall, he's on the veteran minimum. You don't fall any further than this until you fall out of the league. He's in the one-year, $2 million deal. So I like that when you have a veteran has a lot at stake. He can't come in here and thinking, oh, I got this. Like, he's got to fall in line at least somewhat.
Oh, to me, there's no question about that. And that's one of my favorite parts about this deal, that Isaiah Thomas, as a pro, has his back up against the wall. And right. I love betting on pro athletes when their backs are against the wall.
But will it stunt the development of Jamal Murray? For me, that's a potential downside.
It's a fair question.
Is Isaiah Thomas a long-term fix? I mean, what is the long play here? Is it clear? It just looks like a short play, micro view of the Nuggets know they have to get in the playoffs this year. I know Mike Malone does. I mean, he can't miss the playoffs again and survive. For me, I was a little surprised that there wasn't more scrutiny under him last year. Because of some of those bad losses. They had a great
finish.
There
were horrendous losses.
There was some horrendous at Memphis.
Oh, my goodness.
Cost them the playoffs for me.
The Memphis Grizzlies had lost 19 consecutive games leading up to that. And then the following game, 3 days after that, they lost by a franchise record 60. And their win tucked in there was against the Nuggets. The Hawks, who were an 18-win team, came here to Pepsi Center. The Knicks, the Lakers. I mean, there are bad losses littered around. But that being said, only 10 times in pro basketball has a team won 46 games and missed the playoffs. The Nuggets were one of them.
Right.
It was a 4-game improvement, I think, from the previous year. They have to make the playoffs.
Thomas should help that if he's a scorer. I wanted to see him as Vinny the Microwave coming off the bench. Give me 15 a night.
If he embraced that role.
He can do it.
Yeah.
But when he's at his best, he's a ball-centric guy. And they're running as you talk about in your college basketball background, you know this more than I do, that the Nuggets run a motion offense now. But the ball's moving. And he is known as a ball stopper or a guy who needs the ball in his hand. So he has to buy in for me, because you can't have him, like, when he comes off the bench, suddenly it's him dribbling 22 times during the shot clock.
It's not going to work.
It's not going to work with the way they run their offense. And honestly, the offense needs to go through Jokic anyway. He's their best assist guy. So can Isaiah Thomas create space, drive and dish, and then find scoring lanes for himself in limited minutes, half the minutes? I don't know. I know that Mike Malone wanted him, obviously, and he sees him clearly as a piece that can get him to maybe 50 wins to get him in the playoffs, get him over the hump.
To your point about stylistically, how's it going to work? That's a very fair question, because the way that the Nuggets play basketball now is more of the 2018 version of the game, that it's very much so up and down. The Nuggets will likely be, if not leading the league in scoring this year, among the top three and five at a total baseline. And they play like, and some people won't like this analogy, but they play Golden State Warriors light type of basketball, where they snap the ball around and create opportunities for others. They're a three-point centric team. They're a transition centric team. And Isaiah Thomas, to your point, the offense ran through him. His best moments as a pro, the offense is running through him. And I know sometimes when you say ball stopper, it has a hyper negative connotation. When he was in Boston, it was working. They were a playoff team running it through him. He was an MVP candidate. That being said, he's not in a position at this point in his career, 1 year deal, $2 million coming off the hip surgery. He's not in a position to dictate terms of how he's going to play or not play. He's got to adapt to what the Nuggets are doing. The Nuggets have it going. And I know some folks will, roll their eyes at the Denver Nuggets, and to each his own, but most folks in the basketball community, there's like a consensus around the Denver Nuggets that this is an organization and a basketball program in general that is trending in the right direction. And I'm looking at this Isaiah Thomas transaction a lot like I looked at the Michael Porter draft selection at 14. The risk at juxtaposed with the potential reward, it's too lopsided not to make a deal like this. And that's why I like it.
But you might need patience. Would it surprise me if Michael Porter misses this entire season?
No.
It would not. Yeah. And so that's a tough pick if you're Mike Malone. That's a hard one to take, because he needs to get better now. And the bringing back Barton, which it looks like he's going to start, right, based on the money they paid him. I don't like that. I like him as a sixth man. I do not like him as a starter. So for me, that's what I'm saying.
He was their microwave guy.
Yeah. And now, how do you navigate this? You got a guy, for me, who's a sixth man. I think talking to other NBA guys, I know he could have gone to the Pacers as a sixth man. He ends up back in Denver because it looks like he's going to start, right? I mean, my Nuggets guys on Twitter let me know.
He is officially a part of their core now.
They're paying him to start based on the contract. I don't like that. I like him coming off the bench as instant offense. So that's already something you got to navigate. Jokic, I love. He doesn't play much defense. He's limited defensively. So now you bring in Isaiah Thomas, another guy.
He's not much of a defender.
He doesn't defend anybody.
Yeah.
So how do you make these pieces work? It's a lot of intriguing parts, but this will be, even Mike Malone's going to, he's at a crossroads for me. How does he make this fit? How does he make it fit? Because you see the talent. It's intriguing, but you could also see Barton should have been a sixth man. Isaiah Thomas doesn't have anything left. Michael Porter doesn't play this season. I mean, the devil's advocate of this is just as intriguing, that all these things could blow up on him. But I do like the fact they went bold. They understand they've got to, play the high risk, low reward, high risk, or the high risk, excuse me, I'm losing my mind, low risk, high reward game.
Yeah.
And I like that. But with that, understand it's possible that Thomas is done as a good player. Porter doesn't play this season. And Will Barton is miscast and should have been a sixth man. Just saying.
And let me go the opposite way. The Nuggets missed the playoffs. They were three games removed from being a three seed. That's how fickle and log-jammed the Western Conference is. That was with Millsap playing 38 games. If those things go right, you could be looking at hosting a first-round playoff series. We'll see. I'm excited about what's to come, but again, Mike Malone's got to find, to your point, ways to make this work. How about this? The Hall of Fame. They're going to have a Hall of Fame ceremony that doesn't involve Terrell Owens. The year that Terrell Owens is going into the Hall of Fame. Unbelievable. We'll go through it in four down territory next.
And he's loose!
This
is Four Down territory.
Madden is on the field. He wants to know if it's real. They said yes. Get your big butt out of here.
I'm going on to Cincinnati.
I'm here so I won't get fined.
You want to lose? I throw, you catch. It's not that hard, okay? All right, get the out of here.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan. First down.
So after a lot of discussion with my family and everyone, some of my coaches and stuff, I've decided that it's time to come back to the game. And so with that being said, I've officially signed with Madden, NFL 19 Hall of Fame Edition, EA Sports. I'm back in the game.
Classic.
So get your popcorn ready.
Classic sound there from Terrell Owens announcing his Madden return. They have him on the cover this year, believe it or not. I don't know if it's a good or bad thing. But the story here, obviously we all know T.O.'s not going to go to Canton and not going to go to the enshrinement of him going to the Hall of Fame. He's going to do it at his alma mater. But the Hall of Fame has now reacted. And basically, as far as I understand it, they're not going to run a highlight package. They're not even going to really mention him outside of when they announce the whole class in its entirety. Is this fair of the Hall of Fame, or does this, in a roundabout way, validate what T.O. was trying to say about the pettiness of the Hall of Fame in the first place?
I think both of them are a little bit at fault here. When you receive the honor as Terrell Owens, I mean, I covered Goose Gossage trying to get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. I'm a Hall of Fame voter for baseball. And when he ultimately got it, you know, you feel like you realize you got to be bigger than all of the rest, bigger than the past. Once you're in, you're in. Nobody remembers how many tries it took. Nobody. He does. It's personal to him. But I'm telling you, nobody remembers it. They just don't. It's not the deal. But the Hall of Fame looks petty. They look petty. You just run the highlight pack as if he were there. Run it. And he chooses not to be there. Somebody's got to be a bigger person in this.
I was going to say, it just feels like the Hall of Fame is lowering themselves to get down and play in the mud with T.O. a little bit.
Yeah, and when you get in a stink match with a skunk, you both end up smelling. And this looks, it's just a bad look. Now, if T.O., he's made it really personal. It's his prerogative. I wouldn't have done that once I got in. You can harbor that grudge after you go in, but his choice. Hall of Fame, there's no need to be petty here. Just run it as if he's there, and then you take the high road, and then it's like put the ball back in his court. So I think it's a bad look for both. I think it's a worse look for the Hall of Fame because they're the entity. They're the body. Be bigger than the moment.
We are synced up on that for sure. Next in Four Down territory.
Second down.
You using the whole fist, Doc?
Fletch, outside of Clerks, which I had a reference to earlier in the show, Fletch, growing up, all-time favorite movie.
A former tight end, Chicago Bears tight end, Desmond Clark.
Played at the Broncos.
Yep, there you go.
Broncos.
He was on a podcast. He was on the On the Mark podcast and said that he developed stomach ulcers during his playing career as a side effect from painkiller injections that the Chicago Bears were giving him. He said, quote, the business entity doesn't care about the players. Some people do, so you've got to separate the two. Those doctors are chosen for a reason, to deny you. What do you think about this a sentiment from former tight end Desmond Clark about team doctors?
Well, it just feels like there's an inherent conflict of interest because the doctors, I mean, to become a doctor, let's be honest. I mean, it's a very difficult pathway to take in life.
Of course.
So I'm not going to doubt that. But the problem is the team doctor has an inherent issue of trying to get the player back on the field more quickly. And he answers to the team. That's why you always, like when they've had concussions, I always said you should have an independent monitor to protect the player from himself, and in some cases to protect the team from themselves. But when the team, it's a team doctor, who's he looking out for first? The team. It's in the title. Team doctor. And to Clark's point, I mean, the problem is that what makes the NFL great on Sunday is the urgency. Outside of quarterback, cornerback, couple offensive linemen, but outside linebacker, they're all mercenaries. They're all weekend warriors. They're all playing for their paycheck. So it creates a sense of urgency you don't see in the NBA and MLB. But it also makes them fungible pieces. I know a player that I covered with the Broncos. I'm not going to mention his name, but his reluctance and his refusal to take painkillers exited him out of the league because he just wanted a holistic approach. He was worried about his health. of taking painkillers. He wouldn't take it. It wasn't long before he was out of the league, and he was a fringe player. He was a fringe player out of the league. And the problem is you got 150 guys at that door saying, I'll do anything to play in the NFL. So they are put in a difficult spot. I'm not saying to have sympathy for them. I'm just saying, understand, the NFL player is in a difficult spot outside of the X percentage have guaranteed contracts. The rest are mercenaries. They're weekend warriors. So they're forced into making very difficult decisions about their future health to stay on the field, to keep their spot, to keep their roster spot.
Next in four down territory.
Third down. They're going to run McCoy again. On the pitch, left side, dodges him in. He's at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! LeSean McCoy over the left side. Touchdown, Buffalo.
That was Buffalo Bills radio on a Shady McCoy highlight. This situation is not getting any better. In the last 24 hours, Troy, we've learned that police actually made three visits to LeSean McCoy's house before the home invasion, where his girlfriend, former girlfriend, Decilia Corden, who was just, I'm sure most have seen the picture. It's gruesome. She got beat up pretty good. But apparently leading up to that, police had said that they'd been there. They'd been there multiple times. And the more that the details are starting to come together, the demands for these jewelry, these pieces of jewelry that were given to Shady McCoy, and the fact that the police knew that he wanted these back, and the fact that now they're calling the home invasion a targeted attack, that, quote, the suspect demanded specific items from the victims, and those being the pieces of jewelry, it really does not look good for LeSean McCoy.
Listen, I watch Discovery ID all the time. Like, I love murder mysteries. I love crime stories. I just, it's like the one thing besides sports, like I'll sit and watch late
Same.
At night.
It sucks me in.
But this reminds me of one of the, like, you know, whether it's a Dateline or an ABC 2020.
Dateline,
like the
American Greed, give me them all.
The pieces of this puzzle are starting to come together in a way that, you know, who knows? It's complicated. It's very complicated, but it's just, there's a weird coincidence to all this that he wanted the jewelry back. He wanted her out. And a guy shows up asking for that jewelry. Like, who knows? I mean, maybe it is one of those great weird, odd coincidences in life. And the NFL is going to be in a weird position here. McCoy wasn't there. He was in Miami. There's been his belief and his mom's belief that, you know, there was false accusations involved in the past. I mean, this is as a tangled a web that the NFL, in terms of meting out discipline, that it's going to be, it's a complicated situation. We'll see where it goes from here. But, man, it just, the more you peel back layers of this onion, it's not what it seems. I mean, everything about this story is odd.
For what it's worth, Richie Incognito said Shady didn't do it. Yeah. For what it's worth. He said, hashtag pray for Shady. I'm like, you probably can go without that.
I just hope it's justice. And if he's innocent and this was all big setup on him, I hope he's clear too. But this is a very odd case.
Doesn't look good. Doesn't look
very
good.
Odd case.
Next in four down territory.
Fourth down. And what JJ's done, I mean, nothing surprises me with JJ. He really cares about Houston. He cares about people. That's a great thing.
For the story about Shady McCoy, for the story about a body found in Janoris Jenkins' basement, the Cardinals GM, DWI, all these NFL stories, we have to lean on a story like this where Houston Texans star J.J. Watt once again has stepped up and donated $10,000 to a family of a fallen firefighter in Wisconsin who unfortunately was killed by an explosion due to a natural gas leak.
J.J. Watt's just a good person, and I think he's always been that. But because of the outpouring affection he saw from his community over the floods in Houston and the 30-plus million he raised, it's almost become who he is now. So I think initially he did it as a way of, hey, I want to help, and now it's kind of defined him. Zach, I mean, I can't remember last time we talked about J.J. Watt, the football player, because he's been hurt, frankly, the last couple years.
Yeah.
And what a heck of a way to kind of reinvent yourself in terms of being the best humanitarian in sports right now. And good for him. Like, I don't know J.J. Watt. I know some guys kind of have rolled their eyes about it. Is it eyewash?
I
don't care. He's helping people.
Right.
I'm not going to dig much deeper into that. He is helping a lot of people on a daily basis. I admire that, and I appreciate that. And again, in sports right now, is there a bigger humanitarian than J.J. Watt? In, at least on the hop, in this state, on this kind of stage, for me, there's not. And good for J.J. Watt.
Troy Rank, Zach Bye filling in for the fellas this morning. Troy, one of the new upstart football leagues has one heck of an idea. And we'll go through it next. Troy Rank, Zach Bye filling in for the fellas this morning. Troy, one of the new upstart football leagues has a heck of an idea, and I wanted to bounce it off you. This is the AAF, the Alliance of American Football. Now, this is the one, there's two new leagues coming, two new football leagues. One of them is Vince McMahon's XFL again, and I'm sure you've seen somewhere along the line, they are putting real money into the XFL. And when I say real money, I'm talking about $500 million. And there was a thought that at one point that, you know, Vince was putting $100 million because he sold $100 million of his WWE stock. So that's what people thought that liquidation was going to go. It's five times that. So let's keep our eye on the XFL. But the other one is the AAF, the Alliance of American Football. This is the one started by, like, true football guys. The co-founders, Bill Polian. I think Steve Spurrier's involved. You got a handful of, like, true blue football guys. And I found it interesting yesterday reading an article, and this was, I saw this on Pro Football Talk. The quote was from J.K. McKay, the head of football operations for the Alliance of American Football. He said that the players are going to be kept in the regional location where they played college football. Okay, so there's eight cities, and they are going to designate the players to their regional location. So, for instance, Trent Richardson, he's not in the NFL anymore, but he'll play for the Birmingham team. And J.K. McKay, the head of football operations, said, quote, you want to keep local kids home when you can. It creates fan interest. Our Birmingham team will have Alabama and Auburn players, and that will draw fan interest. It just makes sense. You're bringing in guys people know. From a marketing standpoint, it's good. It allows players to stay home. Other leagues have done it, and we're absolutely committed to it and excited about it. Very interesting. Got me thinking that if there was a team here, and it was maybe not necessarily in Denver, but it was in, you know, a surrounding area, say it was in, you know, Aurora or wherever, and there was Philip Lindsay, Cepho, Kyle Sloter, Nick Stevens, I know a handful of those are quarterbacks, but would people come out, and do you think a league like this can catch legitimate traction on like a secondary level to the NFL?
I like the initial thought process of, you know, making people recognizable to their fan base immediately, you know, so you're not forcing a peripheral league onto fans who don't know the players, because that's a lot of criticism of these jumpstart leagues. Like, I don't know who these guys are. They're from smaller colleges or play D2, whatever. You just don't know who they are. So the tie-in and the marketing sense, the marketing ploy makes complete sense. Bring in guys you've heard, even if it's a couple guys. If you're in Alabama, you bring in former Alabama players or Auburn players. Okay, I get it. The issue you run into for me, whether it's the XFL or this AAF Football Alliance, sounds like a WWE outcast here. The issue for me has always been the quality of play. I watched the XFL when it came out. In the first couple weeks, it was fascinating. And then guys, when they did the, you know, dog scramble for the loose ball to see who gets the kickoff, and guys are blowing out their ACLs, you're like, okay, maybe this isn't the brightest idea. And then the offense was, it was so bad, it was unwatchable. There was no offense. The style of play in the XFL was the killer for it. Just, there was nothing to watch. It was boring,
bad
football. The gimmick around it and all the stuff made sense, but when you actually watched the games, they were terrible. So that's my issue with the AAF. Are you going to get enough guys who can play football? I mean, how many people are like lining up to go see the G League, for instance? You know, some of those guys are prospects. A lot of them are. And I hate that. It's because they're professional athletes. But the problem is you're conditioned by the NFL to see guys at the height of their game. And you're conditioned to watch college football, like, you know, on network TV kind of at its height. That is the AAA for the NFL.
Sure.
This next level is the equivalent of what? Single A, double A. Are there enough guys in there to intrigue you? Is the quality of play good enough? That's my concern, because when football's bad, it's really hard to watch. And it usually means no offense. Right? I mean, that's...
Typically. And that's
my concern for any jumpstart league. Can you have enough offense in the game to keep the average fan interested? Because if you're going to try to, like the XFL, if you go back and look, they had a lot like 13-7 games, 14-10. Yeah. Nobody's watching that. So it's no-name players who can't score touchdowns. Don't sign me up. And that's the problem with jumpstart leagues I see.
Do you see, because Americans love football so much, that if they try to do it, now again, these are football guys, especially when we talk about the AAF, this isn't, you know, Vince McMahon. And who knows, maybe he won't make some of the same mistakes twice. So I don't want to count Vince out from catching traction when you're pouring in $500 million into it. But is there such a thirst for football and gambling that if it's in the off season and there's no football being played, and by the way, I believe the AAF is going to start the week after the Super Bowl ends. And they already have a network sponsor. I think it's CBS. It's going to be on national television, the first game, and the championship game will also be on national TV. You personally, will you watch that first game of the AAF after the week after the Super Bowl?
I will watch the first game. I'll give it a chance. But if the quality of play is awful, I'm not going to continue watching it.
Right. Ultimately, that's going to be the judge, right?
I don't care who the names are. I mean, Trent Richardson was unwatchable his last few years in the NFL. So is he going to be he's a draw? Like, again, he was 4 years ago. I mean, Trent Richardson now is not a draw. You know, he's getting cut from multiple teams.
Right.
You know, Johnny Manziel, like a name like that, yeah, you're intrigued. You want to see that. Like, he's not
that
in it.
That could be one.
But that's the kind of name he would have pulled the first week. And maybe after that he doesn't. But I'll give it a chance the first week, for sure. But I'm not going to watch football if there's no offense.
Period,
right? It's just
right?
A bunch of guys I've never heard of playing good defense. Sorry.
I'm scared it's going to look like the football version of the Big Three. You know, have you watched a 3-on-3 league?
I watch a little of it.
I can watch it for 3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah,
but
hard.
After that, I'm like, you know what? I can find better ways to fill my time right now than watching, you know, Reggie Evans and Kenyon Martin fight for a rebound when I know they're going to be slamming cocktails in 12 minutes.
That's what I'm saying. Where's the pool of talent for this? It's guys who didn't make the NFL. And some guys got a raw deal. I get it. But are there enough guys to fill out rosters to make competitive play? Because the most qualified guys who aren't in the NFL are in college. That's their triple A. That's their minor leagues. So when you're not at the height of college, this purgatory land of, are there enough of them? That's my issue. And I don't know that. The skeptical part of me says no. No, there's not enough of them, but I'll give it a chance. I will certainly watch the first week.
You know what I would, you know what I would like to see? Here's what I would like to see. That one of these leagues catches enough traction, Troy, that we can see enough inspired effort organizationally, that things are, you know, because things, when the XFL was rolling, it was never really rolling, but when it was on, you could tell there was a sense of unorganized a theme. It lost its luster quickly. My hope is that one of these leagues, whether it's the XFL or this Alliance of American Football, and if I would have to guess, it would be the AAF, if they could catch enough traction where the NFL could work in conjunction with one of the leagues and have it be used, you referenced the G League, have it be used as an offshoot and in conjunction with the league where it can be a cooperation, work in concert with one another, maybe have affiliations with teams where you can call guys up and send guys down the way that the Rockies do with the Isotopes in Albuquerque. I could see that if the NFL would buy in and invest, I could see that maybe catching some attention of fans and maybe it's sustainable, possibly.
A developmental league has a chance now. It's more ripe now than ever in the NFL because college football used to train the NFL guys. College football offenses now do not train NFL players.
It's like a different sport.
Yeah, they don't train the linemen. because of the way they do the sets. They don't train the quarterbacks, clearly, who are running spread offenses with pictures of Winnie the Pooh and Tigger on the sidelines. They don't call play. It's like you said, it's like it's night and day. It's like algebra to calculus. So that's where the developmental league, if you could give a guy a year, hey, go down there, play, run a pro-style offense, kind of out of the bright lights, learn it. Then when you get into our camp, because in camp there's just so few reps to go around, and now you gave him that kind of cushion between college and pro to develop. And that they had that a little bit with the world football. Not world football, what am I thinking?
NFL Europe.
I mean, a few guys.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly
yeah.
Kurt Warner is one that benefited from it. There's been a few. I'm not saying you're going to just be churning out the prospects, but that part I would think would have some interest to fans of, hey, this guy was a fifth-round pick. No roster spot, but you go down there and let him play middle linebacker, let him play set corner, learn his trade, because that's the hard part of the NFL, man. If you don't make it out of camp, you just start bouncing.
Right.
And you're literally looking to get practice squad to practice squad. Like Mitch Unrein used to talk to him about this. He was like for 2 years trying to get a job in the NFL, and his practice squad, tryout. And he got to the point, literally, it was within like 2 weeks, like, I got to get a real job. Like, I'm running out of money. I got to get on with my life. So that's where I'm curious, like, if you had a developmental league, even if it was, no, even if it was six teams, so it's more quality.
Sure.
That would be, for me, a merit, because college offenses now are not developing NFL players, per se.
No, they're not.
Certainly at quarterback and offensive line, they're not churning out NFL players anymore.
Yeah, those two in particular. I'm going to be anxious to watch this. I'm going to watch it critically and follow it, but I do like the idea of keeping these guys local. I think there's a built-in interest before it even starts. I'm anxious to see how that works. Troy, the Colorado Rockies are one of the hottest teams in pro baseball. And I can't believe I'm saying that, on the heels of, you know, where we were at just about 2 weeks ago, where I think the Rockies at one point had lost 10 of 14 games. They were as far as 8 games back. And now you look, the Rockies are a 48 win club. They're a winning team. They have won 10 of their last 13 games. And if you zoom even farther out, I believe it's 14 of 20. If you take that, you know, again, a further view out of things and take a look back at that Met series, as well. But what do you make of this, Troy? It seems like a real pivot from where we were at just about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, the Rockies. Again, I give them credit because they talk a lot about mental resolve, mental toughness, and you roll your eyes. This team's season was hanging in the balance. They were 4 under .500. They had an awful loss at San Francisco with their one reliever was pitching well. Ottavino got squeezed like Charmin. They lose that game 1-0. You're like, okay, now it's going to span the seasons. I mean, they were literally with 1 foot dangling on the edge of the cliff for me, you know, having covered that team forever. And they put their foot down. They made a statement, and it started on the mound. I mean, they're starting pitching. They've had 2 earned runs or less and whatever, 10 of the last 12, whatever that number is. It started on the mound, and it starts with guys like Kyle Freeland, who's clearly the backbone of the staff.
He is.
And I talked with Kyle the other day at Coors Field for like 15 minutes about pitching, and I just love his nuanced take about pitching. You know, he's like, hey, I fixed my change, not fixed, but newfangled changeup, changed my thumb on it, and I'm like, this guy gets it. You have to constantly counterpunch at the MLB level, and he gets it. But give him credit, and I'm telling you right now, and it's easy for me because I love spending other people's money. The players made a stand. The season was dying. 38-42, you're spiraling. It looks like you could be sellers, and all they've done is come together, win, 2.5 out, go get a reliever. Don't trust Brian Shaw enough. Like, I'm not going to get it whether I liked him or not. I did. I was fine with it. He's not good right now. You can't hope.
He sucks.
Hope is not a strategy. Hope is not a strategy. Go out. The players have earned your benefit of the doubt. They made this season matter again. Go get them a reliever.
You know what? I got to agree. They have forced the front office's hands, especially when you add in as an ingredient those Nolan comments, sort of not so subliminally calling out the front office for that very thing we're talking about. Interesting. We'll continue to follow it and see if they become buyers at the deadline. Troy, D-Mac yesterday on the drive said Vance Joseph is nothing more than a figurehead. We'll go through that audio, but first, what's up with the Denver Snapshot?